Have we ever been asked a question that we did not want to answer? I suspect that most of us have probably had that experience, some more recently than others. And if we think back, there have certainly been times when someone asked us something that we did not want to reply to. If you think back to maybe the last time that that happened or the last few times, it may have been the case that when someone asked you something that you didn't want to respond to, they began that question with the word, why? Why did you do that? Or they might phrase the question in a negative way, why did you not do that? If you think about the word why, you find that this term is often associated with religion. Millions upon millions of people for a long time have put together the words why and God. Why does God allow the innocent to suffer? That's been a popular question. Or someone might say, why are the unrighteous allowed to live, or why are they allowed to prosper? Even one of God's prophets asked that question a long time ago. Or we might have this one tossed our way, why does God allow natural disasters to happen? Why does God love the world? Why doesn't God respond to some prayers in the way that we think he should? Why doesn't God act faster than he acts? We can look at the world and find all kinds of why questions that are put to God. But if we look at the Bible and we look at this particular word, we find really the complete opposite. Instead of in the scriptures God being pestered with various why questions, and that's what we see in the world, it's often the case that God is the one who is asking the questions. Instead of the questions being put to God, the Bible actually presents many of those questions as being directed to man. And this is very early in the scriptures. If you'll think back, for example, to the information that we have in Genesis chapter 4, we have there a question that begins with why. God said, why did you kill your brother? Well, in the New Testament, as we continue to look through the pages of the Bible, we again find at various times God looking to and at man and asking why. One example of that is found in the book of Acts. In Acts chapter 9, the first five verses, we of course have Saul. He's on the road to Damascus to further persecute Christians, and Jesus stops him in a very special, a very unique way, and he asks, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? Well, the Apostle Paul, who was not an apostle at that time, but later became one, might have asked God several why questions. Why was Jesus sent into the world? He might have said, why have the Lord die on the cross? Why start a brand new faith? Why could the system that Moses gave no longer be used? But in Acts 9, we have God using this particular word instead of Saul turning it around and using it on God. So often, though, man wants to turn to God and ask why. Well, that's certainly not wrong. There are some times when that is permissible and right. But we ought to remember that the word why can be applied in many other ways. If we're going to try to live the Christian life, there will be a number of times as we make this journey, however many years that is, that the question that begins with why will be helpful to us. God could look down upon us at virtually any time and ask a question with the word why that would be relevant to the lives of many people. For instance, if he sees a person who's unwilling to change, he might ask that person why. Have you hardened your heart? Why are you willing to stay in that condition and not respond to the word that I've given? Or if he sees a person who's not willing to take the message of salvation to others, he might ask that individual, were he working in that kind of way today, why have you refused to share the message that I've given? When he sees people who will not try to make a difference in the world, which is what Jesus talked about in the Sermon on the Mount, he might ask why. God might ask a person why they do not worship, pray, or something else. God believes in the word why. And I know that because of what we find in the New Testament. For instance, in the book of Matthew, chapter 6, verse 28, Jesus, in talking to the disciples, said, why are ye anxious about raiment? He said, why are the people of God anxious about the basic things of life? Now, I suspect had we been in that particular assembly, that question probably would have gotten our attention. It was asked a long time ago, but that's still a relevant question for today. What if God said, why are you anxious about the things of life? Would you like to answer that question? I'm not sure that I would like to be put on the spot in that regard. But we know that Jesus did ask that question. And that's not the only time the Lord asked a question in this way. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 3, we have another why question coming from heaven. Jesus, as he continues in that Sermon on the Mount, described a situation where there was what we now know as a Christian who saw a small speck in the eye of a fellow Christian. And Jesus said, why? Using that word once again, would you be concerned about that small item when you have this large beam in your own eye? Is it not interesting that as we begin to look at the Bible, that God is the one who is putting people on the hot seat in the Bible instead of man putting God in that position. But that's precisely what we find. God believes in asking why, and he typically makes us the object of the question. And when we do things that are contrary or inconsistent with his word, then we find passages like Matthew 7, and that really opens up our lives to this particular question. Why would we do what is said in Matthew 7, especially when Jesus said not to be involved in such a thing? A time of uncertainty is found in the next chapter of Matthew. In Matthew chapter 8, the disciples were alone on the boat. And although the Lord was with them, he was asleep, and there was a great storm, as we read through Matthew's account, that raged. And finally, the disciples, because of fear, because of concern, they woke the Lord, and they expressed their concern. If you were to look at Matthew 8, verse 26, you would find that Jesus stilled the wind and the sea, and he said this, "Why are you afraid?" We can go through some difficult times in life. And as we go through those periods, whatever they are, however long they last, whatever the intensity, it's quite often for people to ask the why question. And I'm persuaded the more that I have a chance to talk to people and see people go through a variety of things, they ask, "Why, God, have you allowed this? Why has this happened to me? Or why has this happened to my family? Or why has that happened to those other people?" Well, during those times, God might, if he were to look down upon us, looking at this term literally, this idea, and say, "I also have a question for you." That same kind of question in Matthew chapter 8. Why don't you have faith? Why are you afraid? Why are you not confident that I am still with you? Tonight I propose that one of perhaps the most frightening questions God could ever pose to mankind begins with the word why. Even in life, that question can strike fear into the hearts. Is there a person among us tonight who has never been in a position where someone asked a question that began with why and your heart just didn't drop? I think most of us at one time or another have probably been in that position because we knew as soon as that question was asked, when it was phrased in that particular way, we felt the guilt. We felt the weight of conviction. And really, that's the same kind of thing that we find in Genesis chapter 4 and in other parts of the Bible. We see this demonstrated once again, and this is going to be the only passage that I read tonight. It's also from Matthew's account, Matthew 15, verse 3. Jesus is talking to some people who were guilty of violating God's laws. In this particular case, they were religious laws, how to worship, that kind of thing. And he answered and said unto them, "Why, there's our word, do ye also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition?" Now, if you had been in that particular group, how would you have liked to respond to that question? Jesus said, "Why are you breaking the laws of God?" I'm not sure that I would have wanted to be in that assembly. Certainly for these people, it would not have been okay to say, "Well, we are doing that because the laws do not exist." They knew that that could not be an answer. They also could not respond by saying that the laws could not be understood. They did understand the laws. And the violations could not be somehow explained away. But when Jesus asked the question in the way that he did, when he said, "Why are you doing this?" the people did feel the weight. They did feel the conviction of sin. The question was very, very effective in how it was worded. We know, if we are in some kind of home life, the power of why in our homes. If a mate asks their spouse, "Why did you do that?" I can almost guarantee you that that question had better be worded in a very nice way. Because if the tone isn't quite right, "Why did you do that?" Boy, the old hair just rises on the other one, doesn't it? Because again, that particular word, even though it is so small, it sounds like an accusation. It gets the attention very, very quickly. Or if a parent calls a child and says, "Why did you do that?" More than likely, Johnny or Susie is thinking, "I've done something wrong. I am in serious trouble," when mom and dad begin to use this particular word. So as we think about this word from the standpoint of the Bible, one of the ways that we can evaluate our lives, one of the ways that we can see whether or not we're really living the way that God wants, is to look at this word, why. Why do we do the things that we do in the spiritual realm, or stated another way, in the field of religion? Jesus, as he used this word, apparently believed that it was a legitimate tool, a helpful way in determining whether or not something was right or wrong. For instance, in Matthew 21, verse 25, we again have the word why being used. It's used in conjunction with religion, and it's designed to determine something, whether it was true or false. The context, as you look at Matthew 21, involved the baptism of John. Jesus asked if John's baptism were from heaven or man. Where did it come from? That is, did God originate it? Or did this come from the thoughts and the ideas of some individual, John or someone else? Well, the people who heard this question began to think about their options. And option number one was, if it came from heaven, what would we say? Well, they realized that if this were the answer that they gave, then they would have to contend with the multitude. And the people thought that John was a prophet, so they said, we can't really have that option. So they looked at the second choice. If it wasn't from heaven, from men, then they thought, well, maybe we can say it was from heaven. But then they realized that they could not say that, because if they said it was from God, and then Jesus would, of course, say, well, why didn't you accept it? So these people recognized the power of God when a question was posed with the word why. And as we've seen today, God can ask that same kind of question through his word. When there's a person who doesn't believe in him, God can, and again through his word, ask why. It's certainly not because there is a lack of evidence. If people are not doing things or believing things in the way that he has described, again, the why question is important. Why is that? Well, it's certainly not because God has failed to somehow communicate. He's given us his word, and the Bible says that it is complete. Why are there some people who are unwilling to believe in the Bible? Again, that's an important question. It's a crucial question for our day and time. And the answer is not because proof is lacking. The question of why can even be asked when we look at the lives of other Christians. What are people doing? Some of the things that perhaps we're not doing. Is it because they're not adhering to the doctrine of Christ? Or are they perhaps doing some things that we should also be doing, but for some reason we are avoiding? Jesus, in using this particular word, demonstrated its power once again in Luke 6, verse 46. There, it's very simple, it's very straightforward. But he said, why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which you say? Why call, why recognize me as Lord if you're not going to obey me? Well, that goes straight to the heart of the matter. And it should cause people to sit up and think. It will also cause some people to turn away. Not everybody wants to consider that question because it's too frank. It's too direct. It's so direct that some would say we are offended by it. Someone sent me an interesting quote this past week, and I almost put this out on the BNP list, but I thought, well, I'll share it with the people who are here so it has a little wider distribution. And I'll read it twice because it's really a thought-provoking statement. People say they love the truth, but in reality, they want to believe that which they love is true. One more time. People say they love the truth, but in reality, they want to believe that which they love is truth. And you know that's right. A lot of good information can be extracted from that particular statement. And people do struggle in this area. And that's why Jesus was able to ask this simple but very powerful question to cause people to sit back and look and say, well, hey, why are we doing these things? Why are we calling Christ Lord, Lord, when the thing that we're believing, when the thing that we're doing is not consistent with his will? When we begin to look at the word why and see how it's used not only in the Bible but in society, we often find that it is associated with authority. If a parent uses the why question with a child, the parent is typically trying to convey, we are in authority over you. If it's used in an employer situation, why did you do that? Again, the employer is the one who has the authority. But suppose, since we think about this word from the standpoint of authority, suppose God looked down on our life and he made a list of all the actions that we've been involved with, and we'll just say that that list spans the last 6 months. And further suppose that as God has this list before him, and we're there in his presence, God begins to go through that list item by item, line by line, and says to us, why did you do this? Why did you do that? Everything that we've done for the last 6 months. Well, when it comes to the things that we should have done and wanted to do, we'd probably say, well, you know, that was right. Not have too much difficulty there. But what about answering for the things that were not good? One answer would not be an answer that we want to give. But let's say that 10 things were on the list, 50 things were on the list, 1,000 things were on the list. Can you imagine what it would be like as God asked those items one by one? Why? 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 I'm not sure the day of judgment is going to be quite like that, but if it were, you can begin to see just how serious this particular issue is, that God will require people to account for what they've done or perhaps what they did not do. So without forgiveness, and even with it, this is a very serious subject. In Luke 22, verse 46, towards the end of Jesus' earthly life, he said to the apostles, why are you sleeping? Well, Jesus knew the answer. And we know that because of what's said in Luke 22, verse 45. His friends, his disciples, were overcome with sorrow. But Jesus, as he comes along and he sees these men involved in something that was not right, he asks this question and he prefaces it with the word, why? It was not the right time to be resting. And if we can, as we go through the Christian life, begin to look at a lot of the actions that we do and preface them with the word why. Why am I going to do that? Or why am I going to avoid that? It will be a life-changing experience. This past week, I speak with this young lady at various times and had a chance to talk to her once again and learned that she was in the process of modifying her work schedule. She is drastically cutting her hours, and I asked about that. I said, well, how come? And I knew that she was a religious lady, and she said, well, I want to spend some more time doing some church work. I want to be more involved with my church's activities. And I said, well, what kinds of things do you like doing? And she said, well, I'm in a Christian hip-hop group, and that's one of the things that I want to spend more time in. We go to different places, sometimes outside the state of Indiana, in the hip-hop club, and that's something that we want to go ahead and just really spend a lot of time and energy on. And then as I listened to her talk, she gave a reason. And she said, I like to do this because it's fun. And as I thought about that response this past week, and I have no doubt that she's very sincere, she is a very nice young lady, one of the nicest folks I think that we could ever meet. But imagine standing before God one day, and God asks why we did certain things, and the answer that we give him is the answer that she gave me. I did that, God, because it was fun. Can you imagine? How will God respond? Well, not favorably. God said, why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? So that answer is the wrong answer. Now as we go through life, as we have breath each day, that is the time to ask why we're involved in certain things. It's also the time to ask why we avoid certain activities. The Lord, of course, will not at the present time personally ask us why we do things or why we do not do them. But if we look at his word, we can find those kinds of questions, the questions that need to be asked. In other parts of the New Testament, this basic process is referred to as self-examination. Even in the Lord's Supper, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, this idea is expressed. You know, Paul was asking those Christians, why are you doing certain things? Why are you eating before everyone has a chance to come together? And we can give ourselves a pretty thorough spiritual examination by using the word why. We think also of what happened in Acts chapter 5. In Acts, 5 verse 3, there was a man, Ananias, and he was asked why Satan entered his heart. Why did he permit that? Well, that was a good question to pose to this man. And we should be using this same word as we deal with people and situations as we go through life. We know that it's a question that God wants us to ask. We may draw that conclusion from Romans 14, verse 10. There Paul asked Christians why they judged one another, why they were at odds with one another in matters of opinion. It was a problem. It was an issue that had to be rectified, but there were some people who had not really stopped to consider it, and it was wrong. Christians were suing one another. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And as Paul looked at that situation, he says, why? Why? Think about that. Account for the action. What if the Lord returned tonight and had a list of questions that all began with the word why? How would we fare? If we're not a Christian, what if the Lord had at the top of his list for our life, why didn't you become a child of God? Could we give an answer? Or if we had become a child of God and on the list of why questions, Jesus said, why did you not love me as much as you should? How would we answer? Or if on that list, Jesus said, why didn't you serve me in the way that I described in my word? How would we reply? You know, we can probably add a lot of additional questions, but those begin to show just how sobering this matter is. So as you bring this lesson to a close, we simply ask this question. If there's something that's not right in regard to our relationship with Christ, why wait? Why wait to become a Christian? Why wait to rectify something if we're not living as a Christian should live? Why? Is there a good reason? We believe there's not. And tonight, we therefore, again, offer one more chance, either to become a Christian by the plan God has given in his word, faith, repentance, confession, and baptism, and then to continue living faithfully as a child of God. If we can help you in those ways, we invite you to let us know as we stand and sing the selected song.